Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Drop in the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. September 27th, Tim. One day post my birthday. Very exciting. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for the well wishes. Thank you to my family who did not reach out whatsoever. My brother called me this morning. The belated birthday call. Ever embarrassing. My parents, my mom called me last night. After 8 p.m., because it was an afterthought and it was one of those panicked and I didn't even answer, she sent me this text, Tim. And this is how my family rolls. It's very, very fun. I'm going to verbatim what my mom says. She doesn't listen to the show, so she doesn't care. I got a text from Tim's mom.
Yeah.
That's how screwy this is. Very nice of Deirdre. But she goes, "Happy birthday, John. We will call you tomorrow. We have a sick cat here, so we were at the vets on and off all day and yesterday as well. Hope you had a great day." You know what I mean? It doesn't bother me. It just makes me laugh. It's just like, okay, so that stinking cat takes preference over me, your son, your favorite child.
Yeah, and it's funny because you're the person who would care the least in the world about someone else's pet, basically. Oh, like marking up the wrong tree. Yeah, you got no empathy there.
It's hilarious. I talked to my brother today, like I said, after the first vet visit, that's it. That's all I give pets. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go back for multiple visits. Like, my mom wants to cut off the cat's leg because it has a bad leg. And my brother's assured that she just wants a three-legged cat for the sympathy. But she, I guess the cat, yeah, there's this whole thing behind it. But they, as soon as my brothers, I have two brothers, as soon as we left the house, the cat's status rised right away, exponentially. All the pictures on the wall, Tim, are of the cat. It's amazing. Like Molly and Lucy and all the other dead cats that they've had. They've taken, I might have one. There's like four or five cat pictures on the wall. It's amazing.
These are grown people. I'm surprised you even know their names.
That's all they talk about when I talk to them. Lucy Goosey, Molly, that's all they talk about. It's very funny. Very embarrassing. Anyways, how was your birthday yesterday, Tim?
Well, my birthday was coming up in a few weeks, but the big news around here was the hurricane.
I heard about that on the radio. How was everything going? You sheltering?
No, it's fine here. It was here for about, I don't know, 36 hours, and the worst was overnight last night, just debris and everything. A lot of wind, a lot of trees down, but nothing too crazy up here, up in Charlotte. Definitely hit worse, Florida, Georgia, that area. So
Category 4 it was.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Scary stuff. It was a big
one. Evacuations and rescues and all that. So if you're one of those people, hopefully you're doing okay.
Yeah. I was actually just reading about that, how insurance companies, home insurance companies, car insurance companies, they won't insure certain areas just because of the natural disasters that are happening quite frequently. So it's, gosh, I don't want to be mean or anything. You have to love living on the coast to put yourself in that risk, right?
Yeah.
I know some people don't have a choice, but
where you are is like the least natural disaster zone in the whole country, I think, more or less.
The world. Honestly, though, no floods, no hurricanes, no tornadoes, no earthquakes. What natural disaster could happen in the Midwest? The weather stinks sometimes, but there's pros and cons. So it is what it is. I'm very lucky and blessed and aware that we're not in wildfires, all that stuff. No, thanks. I'm good. Michigan, baby. I'm telling you, this is the sleeper state in the whole country. Everybody dogs it because, oh, Detroit, it stinks. Flint, the water's bad. Up north, that's where it's at. Even further north from here. It's God's
country. When I moved out there, all my friends were like, "You moved to where? Lansing, Detroit?" I'm like, "No, no, no." And then they come out and visit and they're like, "Oh, I get it now. Yeah. I see it now." It's like everyone in the Midwest is in on some little secret together. You know,
there are more beaches in Michigan than in California.
Wow.
And that's the truth. Because we have Lake Michigan, obviously, other lakes we border. But anyways, yeah, stay safe there, Tim. You chose to move to North Carolina. You chose
it. I mean, it's over now. The sun's peeking through. So we're okay. We're okay.
How did Levi do?
Fine. He's so funny because during thunderstorms, he's inconsolable, shaking in the closet. Mm-hmm. But during a hurricane, because there's no thunder, he's completely fine.
Oh, no kidding. Even the wind noises. Because you're giving him that good farmer's dog stuff.
That's right.
That's new sponsor of the show, Farmer's Dog. Go buy some dog food. Honestly, that would help us out. Buy some dog food so we can get them as a long-term sponsor. They're a great company.
There's a link all over our social and in the episode description. Go check it out.
Show notes. A promo code or no?
Thefarmersdog.com/gloves. There's going to be an ad during the show about it. That'll give you all the good details.
Tim's doing all the ads because he's got his dog.
I do all the work.
They said, do you want us to send you some dog food? No. So Tim got all the good stuff. But yeah, check it out. This episode, Tim, is also brought to you by Bet365. Proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account today with Bet365. Hockey code CA. Who cares? That's the last one we're going to do for Bet365. So dead to me. All right, moving on. The official preview today, Tim. We've done the Atlantic. We've done the Metro. We've done the other division I can't think of. It is the Pacific Division preview today. Very excited. I played for a few teams in this division, mainly only one, San Jose Sharks, but it feels like I played for more. Arizona Coyotes are in there?
No, they're Central.
Central. I played in a bunch of Central teams, I guess. Arizona, Chicago, Minnesota. Yeah. It was heavy Central. Heavy Atlantic, Buffalo, actually just Buffalo. How many to Montreal, I guess? Rangers? Yep. They're Cosmo, Metropolitan. All right. I've had a bunch of coffee today. Can you tell?
I can now. Yeah. Yeah, you're buzzing.
My wife, for whatever reason, and it's funny how it ebbs and flows with relationships. You know, sometimes you're like, what are we even doing being married together? Are we even like friends? You just like, it just goes in those modes. And then there's some phases, it's like, man, she's doing a lot for me. And I'm in one of those phases where I'm like, man. So she gets up. She's like, can I make you a coffee today? Like, yeah, that'd be nice. And this is before the kids wake up. So it's like 6 a.m. And she's out the door doing stuff. And let me make you a coffee. I'm like, you don't have to. She's like, I will. I'm like, that's very nice. And she brings it to me. I was reading. I read in the morning. Don't want to brag. But, you know, and she just brings it to me, puts it in my hand, gives me a little kiss. I'm like, man, not bad. Not bad. You know what I mean, Tim? Because our coffee machine's broken. So you have to individually. We have that one cupper. It's like the Italian steel thing you put on the stove and it percolates it up through. Kids broke the glass carafe that you put in the coffee maker. So we haven't had like a big substantial thing of coffee in a while. So we've been doing the single hitters. And they're supposed to, I'm like, I'm on one. They're like little espresso shots. And so each of them are very potent. So I had that this morning. And now this is my second cup after that. And I drank these big, big jugs. Michigan Tech
and that cup. That first one is like what, 2-3 cups worth in that little espresso thing?
I think so. I got a big weekend ahead of me, so I gotta just build up all that energy. I'm gonna be cutting wood all weekend. It's my last big push to get it all done. But anyways, speaking of last big push, the NHL season is around the corner. Preseason has started. Very excited. So it's the last division that we have to go through. And some would say, Tim, the biggest resurrected division in the NHL for years. This was the forgotten division. They had their sweet time when LA was strong and San Jose was strong and everything was going right in California. All of a sudden, the last decade, this division has been suspect. You know, Edmonton's always been okay. Vegas Golden Knights came in and buttressed this division up, but there was always Anaheim was bad. Seattle was bad. The Oilers were hit and miss a little bit. The Vancouver Canucks always start strong and I'll throw a stinker in there. Don't look now. There are four strong teams in this division, in my opinion, and a couple teams that because of the draft, because of the lottery, because of some smart GM moves are really starting to look pretty good. But let's start at the top. Vancouver Canucks get a new coach, get a new GM. All of a sudden it just facelifts the whole division. They went from a team that was just underperforming, not getting the biggest bang for their buck from their superstars. Everybody wanted out. Nobody was trying. Turmoil within the locker room and organization, this and that. Boom. You bring in a coach in Rick Tocchet, and he just rights the ship. All of a sudden, these guys are playing the right way. They're all just, they're in it together, and they win the division. They beat the Edmonton Oilers. They go into the playoffs. They're playing fantastic. Obviously, it didn't work out for them. This is a team to be reckoned with. Some additions, they bring in Jake DeBrusk. No judgment there. We'll save it for the second. They bring in Forbert from Boston as well. Sprong, Danton Heinen. You got Desharnais from Edmonton. You got Lincoln in. Some big losses, Tim. huge seismic losses. That's expected. They go all in at the deadline. They bring in these guys who are rentals. Nikita Zadorov, you got Lindholm, Ian Cole, Pods Colvin, you got Makeyev who left, and you got Lafferty who left. Pretty big losses. The question is, can these guys make up from the losses to have a good solid season? They have a great roster still. And then I think we'll touch on it in a second. The biggest question is between the pipes. What's the status of Thatcher Demko? But I'll let you take the floor, Tim. I've been talking for quite a while.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the roster turnover, and as I was preparing for the show, I remember this tweet from last week or over the weekend from Frank Saravalli. He said, quote, "There's no argument to be made, in my view, that Canucks are anywhere near as good a team as they were in that second round series based on some of the players they lost." And he's talking mostly about Zadorov and Lindholm, right? You're, you know, second or third most important defenseman, depending on how you want to measure them, and then a really important two-way forward up front. So you lose those, and you don't really replace him with a whole lot. Jake DeBrusque is a potentially, you know, 30-goal scorer if he's healthy and moving. And Forbert's okay as a shutdown guy, but he's not Zadorov. A couple of, you know, supplementary pieces. So, yeah, those are some pretty big holes. But as you mentioned, there's still a really strong roster. You have Brock Besser in a contract year. We're going to talk about him. You still have Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, all in their prime or entering their prime. And I think it's fair to say with Pettersson and Hughes especially, like, if they're rolling, where they'll take the team wherever they can go. You know what I mean? Like, where those guys go, the Vancouver Canucks go. And I don't mean to diminish JT Miller's importance because he's very, very critical to this roster. But I think it's Pettersson and Hughes' team, and definitely Hughes. So I think they're still going to be fine. I don't think they're as worried about what they do during the regular season as they were this past year. Yeah. Because the year before that, they had that late push, missed the playoffs by just a couple of points. And we had talked to Connor Garland last season, and he talked about, like, as you have many times, those wins at the beginning of the season where you lose by a couple of games here and there, and all of a sudden you're like, man, we really needed those points. You know, like, we let up two late goals in November, and we cost ourselves a couple of points, and it bites you in the ass in April. So they proved last year that they had the sticking power, that they were a legit contender. They were one of the top teams, if not the top team in the West. So now they get to take their foot off the pedal just a little bit in the regular season and gear up to the postseason. Hopefully that's what happens. And I think Tocchet is the coach to have the wherewithal to know that, to not try to get Pettersson. We don't need you to put up 115 points. We don't need Quinn Hughes to put up 100 points. Let's stay healthy. Let's produce. And let's be ready to kick butt in the postseason.
Yeah, I think you are correct in a lot of ways. I think what winning does and getting that far, and they didn't get too far in the playoffs, but, you know, getting there, getting over that hump, it eliminates the panic button. Yeah. Right away, because we see it in Buffalo, we see it in Ottawa, we saw it in Vancouver for years, where all of a sudden you start to stack these losses, and it's like, here we go again. Panicked, not working, okay, and then you just fall back into the routine of, like, we're a bad team. Last year, they kind of slayed that dragon, they got over that hump, and that I think they realized they can win. And the important thing was they figured out how to win games. They play good, they play 200-foot hockey. This isn't like a run-and-gun team like we saw them try to do in years past. This is a good, solid team. And I think the main reason for that, Tim, was that third line. Connor Garland, Teddy Bluger, and Dakota Joshua. Now, the big issue here is Dakota Joshua will miss some time as he heals up from surgery to remove a cancerous tumor. What is his prognosis? When is he going to come back? I don't know. I haven't heard anything. What have you heard, Tim?
Yeah, this was announced last week right before camp started, and he basically said he was going to miss at least the start of camp and ask for privacy, and that he's not going to talk anymore about it. The team will release the info as is necessary. So it's not a question that journalists are digging into. They're going to give him privacy. Yeah. It's obviously a deeply personal thing. It's not a hockey thing. But I think the expectation is for him to maybe, at least if not start the season, be there for the most of it. So very unpredictable in that sense, but I think he's going to be there, and he is very, very important to this team for the reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah, and there's a lot of new faces. You know, you lose Lindholm, you lose Makeyev, you lose a couple pieces. Elias Pettersson could theoretically and conceivably be going into this season with two new wingers, and JT Miller is definitely going to have a new winger. Right now it stands Dan Heinen, his left winger. Pettersson's playing with DeBrusque and some kid. I'm going to butcher the last name, but he will have two new wingers, so you need that familiarity. And with Dakota Joshua out of the lineup, that might jumble the lines a little bit, where it makes it harder to do. But yeah, I don't know. I think Vancouver will be fine. I think they will slip, like Frank Saravalli said. I don't see them slipping too far. I think their D is good. They re-sign Tyler Myers. They bring in Forbert, who I don't love, but if you put him in the right situation, he will succeed. And I really don't like Vincent Desharnais. I don't know why. I didn't like him in Edmonton. I don't know why they bring him in. You already have a tall defenseman in Tyler Myers, who's, you know, limited mobility. Then you bring in Derek Forbert, who brings some toughness, limited mobility and puck movement. And then you bring in a Vinny Desharnais, a big guy, somewhat tough, limited mobility. I don't know why you need more of those guys. In my eyes, I would have given a young guy a shot, someone in the AHL who can move the puck a little bit. Maybe you limit their ice time, but at least gives them an outlet option. So I don't know why they did that.
I think a lot of it just has to do with how good Quinn Hughes is, and mm-hmm. then how much better Ronick makes him, and how many minutes they're going to eat together. So I think they're just like, they're going to rely super heavily on those two guys and just give like Derek Forbert, if you can play 12 minutes, 15 minutes and just block pucks and kill penalties, you know, that's all you need from him. And I mean, Zadorov is certainly a loss, but I think they're going to be okay. And it's funny, Hughes was asked during camp about whether they're going to be paired together again, because it's not super clear. And there's an argument to be made to break them up just for depth reasons, but they make each other so good. And he's like, I absolutely want to play with him. He was calling him Phil. Like when you look at their stats and our plus minus and our time on ice together, like we're so good together. There's no reason to split us up. And he was basically saying, he was, you know, is that the coach? Hey, talk, don't do it. We need to be together. So, and it makes sense. Look what they did last year. It's amazing.
Yeah. And when you look at every team, they have their 1-2 decor. Every team has it. So they won't split those guys up. When I was in Chicago, it was Keith Seabrook. It just, you have to have your top two that eats up 25, 30 minutes a game. It is what it is. You have to fill them out with four guys who are okay. But I don't know. I worry about the back end. It makes me a little nervous when you got Myers, Desharnais, and Forbert. That's not an imposing bottom three. And then, Thatcher Demko. Is he going to come back? What state is he going to be? And if he doesn't, is Shelov's that guy? He played great in the playoffs, but can he do it over 82 games? You bring in Lankinen as some insurance, but there is some concern between the pipes for the Vancouver Canucks.
It's very similar to the Wall situation in Toronto, where you're like, okay, small sample size, big stage, looked really good. What can you do over 82 games? The expectation, again, is that Demko's healthy, but we talked about this the other day. It's one of the most unpredictable injuries you can have, with that weird little ligament behind his knee.
The triangle behind the knee,
Someone, one of our listeners DM'd me over the weekend, said he had the same thing. And they said one of those things that to some degree you carry with the rest of your life. It doesn't never fully heal, but you learn to build and play around it, and it doesn't bother him anymore. So hopefully, you know, we see Demko recover quickly, and the Canucks need him for sure.
Yeah, and Brock Besser. So Besser had 40 last year. Does he get 50? He's going to get a ton of opportunity. That first power play unit will not leave the ice, because after that it gets pretty thin as far as, you know, offensive talent goes for this team. Does he get 50, Tim?
Well, the head coach believes he will. He thinks he could have got 50 last year, and then he, quote, took his foot off the gas when he scored 30. So Besser had 40 exactly, which was his career high. Now he's entering a contract season. So 50 is not out of reach. I think 40 for sure, again, especially knowing that he wants to play for a big ticket. And he's going to be relied on even more now that the top six is thinned out a little bit. Pod Colson's gone. Makiev's gone. Lindholm's obviously gone. So. Yep. Yeah, I think 45 to 50 is certainly within reach. And I think, you know, he even admitted it himself after Alvin said that. So, yeah, I would bet on him for sure.
I always find it funny when coach, he just took his foot off the gas. He didn't want to score more. Sure. He just didn't score. The team that they're chasing in the Pacific Division that everybody's trying to catch up with, the Edmonton Oilers, obviously losing game 7 to the Florida Panthers last year in the Stanley Cup Finals, had a great season. After an ugly start where everybody was calling for everyone's heads, head coach Jay Woodcroft got the axe. Chuck Knobloch came in. I know it's Chris Knobloch. He comes in, rights the ship, takes them to the Stanley Cup final. They won 23 in a row, I want to say, Tim. Was
something that like that. Yeah, they won 23-0 after they made the switch. After starting 2-9-1, like you think about the cup run they went on, finishing second in the division, you forget how poorly they started. And there was even that moment where it was a blowout loss to like Chicago or something. Mm-hmm. For that ninth loss, you're like, what is wrong with this team? Or maybe it was San Jose. It was the Sharks, the worst team ever. But then they ended up making the coach change 23-0. And then another, like after a couple more losses, they won like 25 out of the next 28 or something. Like something stupid like that. And it's a completely different team under that new head coach.
Yeah, and then it just begs the question, what do they need to do to take that next step? And my answer is not much. What do you think, Tim?
Well, I think what we saw in the playoffs last year is that there were a few factors that really made us see that this was a different team. The first is that they had depth that they didn't have before, not only like in personnel changes, but also what you're getting from the personnel you already had. Looking at, like, obviously Evander Kane wasn't healthy, but the Nuge and McLeod and all these guys that were just stepping up in big moments and getting, you know, one or two big goals from your third and fourth line every series is totally a difference maker. And it happened for them for just about the entire playoff run. The second one was the goaltending. Stuart Skinner obviously was giving something that they've been looking for a long time from Jack Campbell and Mike Smith and all the other guys that just did not quite work out. Stuart Skinner was giving them that on most nights. And then the third thing, just as always, when those first two things aren't working, McDavid and Draisaitl are good enough to still win you some games when they're completely on and getting those 4 and 5 point nights. So yeah, they looked really good, and there's no reason to think they won't be back there again.
Yeah, what I noticed this offseason was this is a destination. You know, guys want to play in Edmonton now. It's fun to go there. You resurrect your career. If you're an older guy, you can go there and get some points, and we see that this year. Jeff Skinner, Victor Arvidsson, these guys are going there to play with Draisaitl and McDavid. They probably could have gotten more money elsewhere on the open market, but why not go play with those two stars? Resurrect your career and then sign for more money down the road. Arvidsson signed a 2-year deal. Skinner signed a 1-year deal. Both of these guys, when you look at their track record, 40 goal scores, 30 goal scores consistently throughout their career, playing with guys not as good as McDavid. You know what I mean? I like this move for both of these players, and I like it especially for the team. You bring in proven goal scorers. It's not like the Colorado Avalanche. I don't think they're at the height of the Edmonton Oilers as far as getting players. The Avalanche get guys who are third, fourth, fifth chances. Skinner and Arvidsson are still very good hockey players. Coming off of 30-goal campaigns, Arvidsson was hurt last year, but still played pretty good when he was in the lineup for the LA Kings. So I like the additions. I feel like the Oilers got better. Even though they lost Dylan Holloway, even though they lost Philip Broberg, you bring in these veteran players who know how to play the game and who know how to play with high-end guys. You look at this team, then you look at a team like the Vancouver Canucks, who are slated into play in their first sign. It's like, okay, Jeff Skinner, Victor Arvidsson, Danton Heinen, that's good. He's not Victor Arvidsson and Jeff Skinner, who have done it for the last decade, and then Jonathan Lekkerimäki, who's this rookie. I don't know anything about him. He could be fantastic. I feel like the Edmonton Oilers, players want to play there now. They want to go. They want to win a Stanley Cup. They want to play with these guys now that they know they're locked up. That's why Matias Janmark re-signed. That's why Adam Henrique signed. That's why Connor Brown re-signed. That's why Corey Perry re-signed. These guys want to be there. They want to be around success. So it's fun to see that in the back end. Evan Bouchard, his coming out party last year was fantastic. He has solidified his status. There was a question mark last year with him and Darnell Nurse. It's his team now. It's his back end. Him and Matias Ekholm are ones who solidly supplanted Downer North. Darnell Nurse was 5'6 at points last year. That's kind of how far he's fallen from 2 years ago when he signed the big deal and was terrific in the regular season and even strength. He had a great year. But yeah, the Oilers are great, Tim. And they need to win it this year. They need to win it this year because when you look at the cap situation, it's going to get hairy. Evan Bouchard needs to get paid next year. In 2 years, Stuart Skinner needs to get paid. And then the elephant in the room, Big Mac, is going to get his money. So you're going to pay three players a ton of money in the next 2 years. But you got to win it now. This is the year. This is their best team. It's going to get.
Do you think because they went to the Stanley Cup Finals and they kind of represented the West, are they automatically the team to beat? Or do you look at some of the other teams and think they might be better than Edmonton right now in the West?
There's nobody in the Pacific that I can see that's better than them. And when I look at the Central, maybe Dallas. But yeah, this is Edmonton's conference for sure.
Yeah, and finally we got to see a long playoff run, which is what we've been waiting for many years. So very exciting for them. And I think, you know, like with the Vancouver situation, although even more so, you've gotten rid of, like, here we go again. You've gotten rid of, like, we don't belong. You've gotten rid of all those doubts that can really hurt you in a series and creep up and just say, here we go again, another year where we're out in the first round, second round. You're beating some good teams. Yep. So, yeah, awesome, especially seeing Skinner's confidence up.
My biggest question mark, Tim, is Evander Kane. We talked about it a few shows ago, might even been last show, how important he is and how he was missed. If he comes back, and I don't know when he's coming back, but if he comes back and he's slated, you know, 100%, he's motivated, they'll win the Stanley Cup. I'll say it. He is a huge factor on this team. All of a sudden you have three lines that are very, very dangerous. Because right now you got Nuge, McDavid, Hyman, you got Skinner, Drysdale, Arvidsson, and you got Janmark, Henrique, and Connor Brown. If you drop Connor Brown down and you got Janmark, Henrique, and Kane, that's dangerous. Or you put Kane with Drysdale and Skinner, and it's a fun activity to do to play around with all these forwards, but I don't know how it works salary cap wise, but if they can fit him in and he's healthy, dangerous team. Very, very dangerous team. All right. Anything else on the Oilers, Tim?
No, let's move on to the next team, the LA Kings. What's up, guys? Tim here. Listen, if you've been listening to the show for a while, then you know that I have an adopted rescue dog named Levi. He was around 6 when I got him. He's 8 now, and he's the sweetest and most loving companion you could ever hope to know. Dog owners know what I'm talking about. You want the best for your pets to help them live as happily and healthily as possible. That's why we partnered with The Farmer's Dog. The Farmer's Dog makes feeding real healthy dog food easy and convenient, and your dog will absolutely love it. Levi is obsessed, and he's been licking his bowl clean every day. The Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food right to your door. It's developed by vets, nutritionally balanced, and made from real meat and veggies to the same safety standards of human food. A healthy diet isn't just important for people. It has all kinds of benefits for dogs, too. From healthier coat and skin, to better breath, even easier digestion. Levi's energy has been so much better since making the switch, and he looks forward to mealtime in a way that he never has before. The package came in and everything was personalized with Levi's name. I mean it when I say these guys love pets the same way that you do. And now you can join the movement and get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/gloves. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to thefarmersdog.com/gloves to get 50% off. That's thefarmersdog.com/gloves. The playoff rivals, if you will, 3 straight years where they lost to them. Let's talk about the additions they made. Darcy Kemper, Joel Edmondson, Warren Fogle from Edmonton, Tanner Janot, Caleb Jones, Kyle Burrows on the back end. Lost a couple of big pieces, some good, some bad. Matt Roy, obviously, went to Washington. Pierre-Luc Dubois, Cam Talbot, Victor Arvidsson, Blake Lizotte. So, it's a very different team than we've seen in the past. We're going to talk about some of the roster changes. But the big one right now, elephant in the room, is Drew Doughty. Went down a couple of nights ago with a lower body injury. It turned out to be a fractured ankle. I haven't seen any timetable yet. He's obviously no spring chicken. So if he misses significant time, this changes the entire season for them. If he's out for 2, 3, 4 months, whatever it could be, like they rely a lot on him, even at this age, especially with like Matt Roy gone, for example. You still get some pretty good defensemen, but you need him as much as any team needs one defenseman. And if he's out, they're going to be hurting.
Do you think they got good defensemen after him? Gavrikov, he's okay. Pretty good. Mikey Anderson.
Very good. He's very good. But mostly he's very good because he has great chemistry with Doughty.
Yeah. And Joel Edmondson. Burrows, Spence, Brant Clark, they need him to step up in a big way. So this is a huge, huge deal for the LA Kings. Matt Roy was the other stalwart back there who played a ton of minutes and was fantastic last year. He's gone. If Drew Doughty is gone, which he is, this team has no chance. I'm sorry. No chance whatsoever. He was the guy. First power play unit, first PK unit, logs a ton of minutes. He's done. This team is done because of that one injury right there. They have a great offense, Tim. Very scary offense. But with that single injury, man, that back end looks terrible without him. It really, really does. They can score with anybody if they want to. They can play solid defense up front. You lose Pierre-Luc Dubois, doesn't change anything. You shift Quentin Byfield to center. You got Kopitar, Byfield, and Dano down the middle. Young kid Alex Turcotte down the middle, too. Still very strong. But to me, there's no chance. That's a huge, huge injury for this team. And I just can't wrap my head around how they get past it. So, unfortunately.
Yeah, I won't argue with that. The one case to be made that they could be okay is Brant Clark. If he can take on a top four role, if he can log 20 minutes a night, if he can be relied on in all situations the same way that Lane Hudson is trying to do in Montreal. And, I mean, you can't compare him to what Brock Faber did last year in Minnesota. But if he can give you 70% of that, you know, and just be a good, reliable defenseman, that does ease the pain a little bit. And the expectations are high for this kid. It's just how much can you rely on him quickly? You know what I mean?
Yep.
If there's anything like that. The other thing I want to talk about is Quentin Byfield. Can he continue that trajectory up that we've seen for the last 3 years in a row now? He had 10 points his rookie year, not a full season, 22 points the next year, and then last year, 55. A nice jump. If you continue that trend, is he looking at 70, 75 points this year? Not out of reach. And I know you watch him quite a bit covering the Hawks. He's a long body. He moves well. He's got that good hands. He could be a point per game guy this season if all goes well for him.
Yeah, I think that's what they're expecting. That's why they drafted him so high. That's where his trajectory is. That's why they signed him 6.25, I think it was. So they need him to take the next step. I think that you let Pierre-Luc Dubois go with the intention of playing him at second line center. I think that's the idea so far Rob Blake has. Hopefully he fills in Brant Clark. There's a lot of hoping. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of, we need this to happen in order to be good. And so that's why I really, with that Doughty injury, they need everything to go good in order for them to even sniff the playoffs in my eyes. So, but we'll see. Cause yeah, Vegas will be better. They won't have the same season that they had last year. They might, but I don't think so. And the Oilers and the Canucks, obviously they're the bells of the ball in this division. So the Kings, they're good, but gosh, Drew Doughty is so important to that team. And he's like 37, I think. It's a crippling injury. He's only 34. 34. Yeah. Feels like he's been around forever.
He's been around for almost 20 years.
All right, moving on.
So another interesting point I was reading about from Daily Faceoff was how much runway does Rob Blake still have as a GM? And he pointed out, Frank, that this is his eighth season, doesn't have a single playoff series win to show for it. Now, a lot of it's context. You have to understand they're running into Edmonton the first round every time, but he's got this Hall of Fame player pedigree, similar to an Yzerman and a Sakic and Brendan Moore, where you're like, okay, he knows it. I trust him. He knows the game. He's a tough guy. But you can only get by in reputation for so long. And if LA doesn't have at least a series win this year or two, do you feel like he could be on the chopping block?
Yeah, why not? I would. Fire his ass. I don't know. It's a results league. Yeah, I guess he can fall back on. He just keeps getting Edmonton every time. That's what Toronto did. They just keep running into Boston every single season. But you have to. Have to win a round, you would think. But he's going to be fired. I don't know. Yeah, fire. They fired the coach. And he's the logical next, because I think Lucky Luke is the president. Rob Blake is a GM. So one of them has to go, you would think. It's been long enough. They've been spending money. They've been developing players. You have to make a change. All right. Vegas Golden Knights, Tim. They made the biggest splash last year at the deadline. They went all in, get Thomas Hertl, get Noah Hanifin, the two best players arguably out there. Bounced in the first round by the Dallas Stars. Because Vegas Golden Knights finished second in the wild card? First in the wild card?
I think second, yeah.
That's how it worked out. So they matched up with Dallas, who won the Central, and then it was a great first round, but Vegas loses. That's how it works. What do we do now? We trade our draft picks. We mortgage the future because we want to win now. All of a sudden, you lose in the first round, and you have to start asking questions. How do we fix this? Well, we go all in. We keep Hurdle. We keep Hanifin. We get rid of our goaltender, and then just we reload. We still have a great hockey team. We got Eichel and Stone and Carlson. Thomas Hurdle probably wasn't 100% when he was playing. He's going to be back and healthy. You have to continue to play. Then on the back end, it's not bad, too. Shea Theodore, you bring in Hanifin. You got Pietrangelo. It's a good team, Tim. Very, very good team. I just think last year was almost a throwaway year. Injuries, players out of lineup, not winning games they usually win. It was just kind of like a blah year overall, and it has spilled over into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a really talented roster on paper. I just feel like the other teams are starting to pass them. Like, I would put Dallas ahead of them. I would put, obviously, Edmonton ahead of them, Vancouver. And maybe they'll prove us wrong. And maybe Eichel and Stone and Carlson and all those guys will say, hey, we're still one of the top 3-5 teams in this league. And they put all their eggs in one basket with Aiden Hill, and he earned that job. But they let Logan Thompson walk this year, and bringing Elias Samsonov as a 1A type goalie. And I don't know, they're fine. There's not a whole lot that excites me about this team. You know, there's not a whole lot of exciting storylines. There's not a lot of players I look forward to watching. Eichel had a great season, but I don't know. There's just, they'll be there. They'll lose in the second, third round probably. And I don't know. What more is there to say about these guys?
No, nothing. I think that's fine. I think they're a great hockey team. I don't think anything's changed in Vegas. I think they'll be there. I really expect them to be in the Western Conference Finals, battling it out for a chance to go to the Stanley Cup. I'm a little bit higher on them than I think you are. But only time will tell. When you don't make many changes, you can't talk about them too much. This is a good hockey team. I just think last year was a down year for them. All right, moving on. Calgary Flames. What's going on in Calgary, Tim?
Yeah, so Jacob Markstrom traded to New Jersey over the summer, obviously. They also let Mangiapane go, Oliver Kylington, A.J. Greer, some other depth players. Bringing in Anthony Mantha, Jake Bean, Kevin Ball, Ryan Lomberg, Devin Cooley. So you don't lose a whole lot. You don't bring in a whole lot. You don't have a whole lot. I know they have some up-and-coming prospects, but just talk about another team that's just a bit of a downer. Not a lot of exciting things going on. You look at their roster, not great. You look at, you know, and Huberdeau had a little bit of a bounce back year. I think he had around 70 points, which is fine. It's not worth 10.5, obviously. And things are going to get worse before they get better for this team. It's going to be a frustrating team to root for. You're not going to eat a whole lot of wins. I could even see them finishing bottom two in this division. Honestly, I could see either Anaheim or San Jose getting more wins than them. That's how down on this team that I am.
Yeah, rightfully so. I think they're making the smart move. Craig Conroy inherited this lineup from Brad Treveeling, where Treveeling was an all-in mode. You know, you're trying to win Stanley Cups, you're trading away draft picks, you have a great, great team. And then Craig Conroy comes in and he has to change things. You know, you're saddled with Huberdeau's contract, you have Nazem Kadri, you have some valuable assets on the back end, and you have Markstrom. I think he's done a great job with what he has. And with all of that, you still have to endure the losing. Like, you still have Jonathan Huberdeau's contract. You still have Nazem Kadri, who's a valuable piece. I would expect him to continue to deal. It would not surprise me if he tries to unload those two guys. Will he find a suitor? I don't know.
No.
Kadri's 33, but he's valuable to some teams. He's only making 7. They can make it work there. But this is just a team that's still trying to figure out how to move forward. So they're throwing flies on the wall, see what's something on the wall and see what sticks. But they have some good pieces. I like Shangorovich. I said he was going to be a star when he came over from Vancouver. He's played fantastic. He scored a bunch of goals last year when he was given the chance. I like Kuzmenko. They have some pieces that know how to play the game. But then, yeah, when you have those bad contracts, their back end could use some work. Their goaltending, you know, it's just Vladar. It's Wolf. It's just kind of a lot of question marks there, but I don't hate the team, but I need to figure out where they're going to go. Do you know what I mean? Are they going to contend? Are they going to be a bubble team? Is Jonathan Huberdeau going to, you know, revert back? Or are you going to throw him on the third line with Anthony Mantha, as they show now on Daily Faceoff? There's a lot of question marks again. And that's what happens with teams that are in flux. There's more question marks than certainties in these situations.
Dustin Wolf is the goaltender. He's probably going to get the bulk of the starts, at least half of them. It's worth pointing out, he was the AHL MVP in 2023. So he's a good goalie. What?
He's probably going to get the bulk of the starts, at least half of them.
What is funny about that?
Well, that's like, that's just funny. I hope he gets at least half of them if he's going to get the bulk of the starts.
Okay. All right.
He's probably going to see the net most of the time. Well, at least 41 games.
60% of the time, it works every time. He's going to face a ton of shots. That's for sure. Whoever's there. And even like Mackenzie Weegar, it's just, I don't know. This is just, it feels like players get worse when they go to Calgary, like all of them. And so, yeah, I think to your point, I think you just kind of embrace the suck and just lose. Just lose and rebuild and try to unload those contracts. I don't even know why. Maybe Huberdeau's a buyout candidate. You know, I don't know. He bounced back last year. Maybe they hope he gets closer to a point a game and someone's willing to take him on. But yeah, this is going to get worse.
Yeah, no, Huberdeau stinks. I don't know. I don't think he had a bounce back year last year. I think he's still sunk. Weir's good. Yeah, they're, you know, Tim, it is what it is. There's some pieces there. Teams have to lose. You know, not everybody can win. It just so happens that the Calgary Flames did a lot of winning for the last decade. A lot of winning. They're a very good team. They have a lot of money to spend. They got $20 million in cap space. They have a lot of players with bad contracts that maybe they can move away from. But a couple first-round draft picks this year and next year, thanks to some of the trades they made. But I don't hate this lineup. They won't win very many games, but I like the way this team is set up. All right, moving on. Get the Calgary Flames and the Seattle Kraken. I don't know anything about the Seattle Kraken. I'll be completely honest. I don't care about this team. I know they win some games, but other than that first season, when they caught everybody off guard and they played fantastic, this team is just this invisible team to me. I don't know why. I just cannot get excited about this team. They made some kind of fun additions. They took Brandon Montour from the Florida Panthers. They bring in Chandler Stevenson from the Vegas Golden Knights. That's fun. But then, I don't know. You know, like, it's just, nothing really gets me going with this team. Prove me wrong, Tim. Prove me wrong.
Well, I think to your point, there's not really a clear identity with this team. There's no captain on this team, and there hasn't been any rumors that they're going to name one. So there's a couple, there's an element missing, especially if you're an out-of-market person like we are. Like, what is it that we should be watching for when we see this team? Two things that I think are worth keeping an eye on. First, Brandon Montour we brought on. I'm not convinced that he is the 60-point defenseman all the time, regardless of situation. I'm not sure he's a legit 1A outside of that great situation he was in Florida. He's very, very good, and he skates like the wind. So maybe he'll prove me wrong. But I think what's more important with him is that he's going to bring out a better version of Vince Dunn. Similar, but not quite, but similar to what Ronick and Quinn Hughes did, where they're just two good defensemen making each other better, and the sum is worth more than the total of the two parts. So Vince Dunn is the guy that hitched their wagon to him, I want to say 2 years ago, 7x7, something like that, at a time that kind of surprised us. So maybe Montour can give them two legit number one defensemen, and that'll be fun to watch. The other thing is Matty Beniers. Can he take a step forward? He had 57 points his sophomore year and dropped down to 37 last year. His new contract just kicked in. He's making over $7 million. He needs to prove that he's worth it. So another player that watching that, you know, is he a point per guy game? Is he a 1A center? We'll find out this year. But other than that, yeah, there's not a whole lot that excites me.
Looking at Montour's stats, it's amazing that one outlier season. Like, consistently, you can lock him in for 27 to 32 points. He's been in the league for 8 years, and I think every year he's had around that range, give or take 5 points. And then 22-23, he puts up 73 points. Double, more than double every other year. I don't, like, talk about just an outlier that I've ever seen. I don't think he's that guy, but yeah, $7 million, man, he's making a lot of money. But yeah, they need a lot, much like the other teams who are on the bubble. They need a lot of things to go right. And then giving Chandler Stevenson 6.25 for, is it 7 or 8 years? What are we doing here, people? Because this guy had one good playoff run with the Vegas Golden Knights. That's what people, he's a good player. Don't get me wrong.
I think he's such a great system player. He's a great, when you have like another, a great top four, a top six in your forward group, and you can be either second line center, third line center, or he can play all three forward positions. Like, he's good situationally, smart. But yeah, giving him the boat and saying, hey, go lead our offense is not, that's not it, as the kids say.
Yeah, when you look at your, I guess this team's always had that issue because of the way the expansion draft worked. They couldn't get the top guys. Everybody was protected. Vegas ruined it for them, practically. And so they got the second tier of players, and they haven't been a terrible team enough to get the lottery. And right. The one guy they do get was Shane Wright, who is a bust. Like, let's be honest. So they don't have those superstar players that they can just say, okay, those guys are good. They have a bunch of second tier guys. The Shorts, the Burakovskis, the Bjorkstrands, the Yanni Gourdes, McCanns, now the Stevensons. And they haven't lured any high-end guys to come to Seattle just yet. They were hoping Matty Beniers kind of stepped into that role, but it's not going to happen. He's not that guy. You're not that guy. You're not that guy, pal. So it is what Tim wants him on the show. He's hopefully not going to listen to that segment, but it is what it is. If you can't draft superstars and no one wants to come and play with you, you will never win. You need superstars to win. You do. It's just the nature of the beast. All right, the Anaheim Ducks, captained by Radko Gudas, friend of the show. Don't remind me. They are coming off a very underwhelming season in which I think everything went wrong. The year before, they made the nice push for the playoffs. Everybody was playing great. Everybody was excited about this team. Pat Verbeek making all the right moves, not overpaying his players. They were going to take the next step. Nuh-uh. This team was a dumpster fire last year. Everything they did was wrong. Every button they pushed was the wrong button. Their superstars didn't play good. Their young guys were bad. Everything went bad to them. What did they do this offseason? Nothing.
Nothing. This is one of those, like, the offseason additions are these young kids getting better, right? Yeah. Similar to some of the other teams that's in true. The league. So that's what they're hoping for. But everything was horrible last year. They were 30th in goals for, 30th in goals against. Bottom 10 in special teams, just brutal. What they do have are the exciting kids. Leo Carlson, Cutter Gauthier, Mason McTavish, Bennett Senecky, who they drafted third overall this past draft. And that was a bit of a reach. He was more like the, you know, bottom 7, 8, 10, something like that. He went third. But the big story for this team, if you're watching and you don't care about who wins, more just the exciting parts of following this team, is Trevor Zegras. Is this a year he finally puts it all together? And I want to qualify this a little bit because I know how you feel about him. He missed 50 games last year, mostly because of injury. He was benched a little bit. But he had 65 points and 61 points in the 2 years prior. That was playing all situations, not a whole lot of help, learning the league, teenager, right? So he definitely has NHL caliber talent. Do you feel like, what does he have to do to say, okay, you know what, Trevor Zegras earned my respect. He's a legit star, up-and-coming star in this league. Or do you give him no chance of doing that?
Well, you have a very loose definition of a star. I think it's a little more broad than I am. I think he's a good player. I don't think he'll ever be the best player on his team. I don't think he's the best player on this team. I think he needs a lot of help. I compare him to, I know it's far-fetched, but I just got to watch Connor Bedard last year. Connor Bedard had no help. None, Tim. Zegras had Strom and Killorn and Troy Terry and a couple other solid players to play around. And he still only got, 40 points, 30 points, whatever it may be. Like, Bedard got no help and got 60-plus points. So I don't think this guy is a star in this league. I don't. I think he's a very good player. I think he'll be a very good second-line player. But I think his ceiling, 70 points, 75. To me, he is poor man's Tyler Seguin. That's it. He's not going to be your best player, but he's a good. He has amazing talents. Amazing, amazing talents, but he's not going to be, you know, no one's going to mistake him for a hardworking 200-foot player who really gives it all, who's going to drive, you know, to the net hard or go through the wall for somebody. He's a perimeter guy who's got incredible hands who just will never get it until he proves me wrong.
So, do you think, like Seguin, that if he, you know, plays the next 10, 12 years, whatever, he could have random years where he's a 40-goal, 80-point guy, you know, and then come back down to earth the next year? Just everything just happens to go right for 82?
Yeah, I think you'll have those if he plays some good players. I don't think he's going to get it in Anaheim right now, but yeah, anything's possible. But yeah, I don't see him being that guy, and there's no slight in that. Not everybody can be a star in this league. Everybody's very good, and he's a very good hockey player. He's obviously a top six forward wherever he goes. But there's a reason he has that reputation. I just don't want to, like, ignore the fact that he has this reputation. He doesn't play solid in all facets of the game. He doesn't play defense very good, and you can try to force him to do it. If Pat Verbeek can't get the message through, there's a reason Radko Gudas is the captain, everybody. He's trying to send a message to this team. So maybe it'll happen. I don't know. But 4 years in, it doesn't look like he's getting that message. He's scoring points. He's going to the beach. He's playing his game. He's doing the Michigan. And I know those things get a lot of attention. It's the way he plays. So it is what it is. But no, I don't think he'll be a star. I think maybe 1 year he puts in 40. Yeah. But for the most part, he's going to be 60, 70 points, 20 to 30 goals. That's a good hockey player. He will make $50 to $80 million doing that. So to embrace it.
All right. Let's talk about the last team here, the San Jose Sharks. And this is the one that is fun to talk about. Horrible year last year by all standards in the regular season. Then they go and have a massive offseason. First of all, drafting Macklin Celebrini, Sam Dickinson, and they also bring in Will Smith, who's going to join drafted the year prior, but he's leaving BC. And a lot of the stats, one of the articles I read, like the predictive models they have with all these advanced analytics, that it's one of, if not the best young group of prospects in their model system, which is pretty cool. They also bring in Tyler Toffoli, Barclay Gaudreau, Cody Ceci, Jake Walman, Wenberg, and then the big goalie Askarov from Nashville. It's a completely new team, and four of their top scorers last year are gone. Zadina, Duclair, Hurdle, Hoffman either moved at the deadline, left the free agency. The next top remaining high-scoring forward is Luke Kunin, who had 18 points last year. So it's a completely new team, entire roster turnover. The kids are getting the keys to the car. And we talked with Fabian Zetterlund not too long ago, and the excitement was palpable. Like, he's so thrilled to be playing with these young kids. And he's got even the other kid, Eklund, who is still only 23 or something like that. He's still got a lot to prove. There's just a lot of fun things to follow. This is a team that's still going to lose more games than they win, but you'll be able to see the excitement all season long.
Yeah, Eklund's 21. He's entering the second year of his ELC. So this is a young team. But I think there's a reason to be excited. Mike Greer has pushed every button correctly on this team. He's doing everything the right way. He came in. He didn't try to push to extend the lives of Pavelski and Burns and Vlasic and Hurdle and all the old guys. What's that?
Didn't he extend Hurdle?
But he didn't try to like add more to this team.
Yeah.
To try to extend that Stanley Cup window. He understood where the San Jose Sharks were, and he got rid of some people. He tried to trade. I'm sure he's tried to trade Vlasic a million times. He couldn't get it done. And he's just, let's go. Let's rebuild. This is the team we're going to run with, and look at it now. It looks like they're in a great spot. And let's not put the cart in front of the horse. This team is still bad. They're going to lose a lot of games this year, but I feel like they will be a respectable team. They will be fun to watch. They're embracing the rebuild. Will Smith, Calabrini, Eklund. This is the future, Tim. And it's very, very fun to watch. And yeah, Zetterlund was all in. He's the old guy on this team right now, and he's 25. And it's going to be fun because Vlasic's money is going to come off the books. You're going to get Couture out the window, not the door, even though he's hurt. But this will be their team moving forward. And I think the biggest addition was between the pipes. I think Askarov is a good goaltender. You know, Nashville's been known for their pedigree. You had Pekka, you got UC Saros. They've Ben Bishop. They breed goaltenders in Nashville. And I think Askarov, when you give him the net, which he inevitably will, you got Vanacek, you got Blackwood, Askarov, this will be his net, Tim. I think he's going to be a superstar. I think he's going to be he's going to be a star. He's going to be a very, very good goaltender. And this team, Tim, just give him 4 years to mature, sign some talent. They have a lot of money right now in salary cap. I think they have almost $20 million, $10 million, and you add Logan Couture's eight, so it's $18 million they can spend. It's nice to see the tank. It's nice to see the Sharks with some future, some promise, rather than like cap hell like they were the last 5 years.
Yeah, do you think it should be Greer's goal to try to get some more high draft picks, or do you feel like they've got enough and now it's more about moving forward with the group that you've got?
Yeah, it's interesting now the way players sign contracts, right? So you can't continue to go and get these high-end draft picks and acquire them, because in 2 years, you are going to have to sign these guys. And the way the salary cap structure has been working, you can't sign them to a low number now. So Smith's going to want money. Celebrini's going to want money. Next, all those guys are going to want $7, $8, $9 million in 3 years. So you have to plan for that. So I think you go and you get the veterans. You get the $2 to $5 million range to try to round out that roster. And hopefully those three or four young kids turn out to be who we think they're going to be. And it's not like the Ottawa Senators where, okay, we got the group. We got Batherson. We got Stutzel. We got Tkachuk. We got all these guys. It's going to be great. And then it just doesn't happen. You know what I mean? So you have the group you're going to the dance with. Can they turn out to be that great player that we hope they are? And I think each GM, they go with a group. And if they're that guy, they're that guy. So we'll see. But no, they'll get vets to kind of fill out their prospects right now.
Yeah, just the last thing I'll say is just, again, a commendation for Mike Greer and what he's done with his team. Yeah. And moving the contracts that he's done with Hurdle and Carlson and creating, an impossibly bad situation is something that's really, really thrilling and exciting in such a short window. And again, they're going to lose more than they win this year, but you see the path forward, and really fun to watch.
And not reaching too, just accepting you're a bad team.
Yeah.
So that he has trust from the ownership to say, hey, we're with you. You're not on the hot seat. You don't need to win games in order to keep your job. So it starts at the top in that situation, because a lot of GMs, they would come in and they go, oh my gosh, this is my first time being a GM. I need to put my imprint on this team. I have to win in order to keep my job. And then they go out and sign guys and try to do it in the first year. The next thing you know, 3 years down the road, you're still in the same spot. So it's nice, the owner, the president, to say, hey, we're in it for the long haul. Do the things you need to do. We're accepting losing, but as long as there is a pathway to success, and that's the way they've been doing it. So it's very, very nice to see. All right. Quick hits, Tim. What are we doing today?
Yeah, Dahlin was named captain officially the other day, which was a surprise to you, and it shouldn't be, because I said he was going to be, and that should be word enough for you. But
listen, that dirtbag dodged our podcast, so it's just like, what a piece of work that guy is. Sorry. Whatever. Good for him.
Ryan Little's is going to sign a one-day contract to retire with Winnipeg as a Jet. It's pretty cool.
How is he still playing?
I don't think he is. I think he's just hadn't officially retired yet.
I wonder if he was LTIR or something. Or
I think he was one of those Arizona contracts at one point. Those just getting him to the floor.
Osa and Pronger and Datsyuk and
Tim Thomas.
Boland and the Longhouse. Now they got Shea Weber.
Yeah. The last thing here, did you see the little incident with Willie Nylander last night?
I did. Yep.
There's a pretty split debate on whether Robertson thing was no big deal that happens all the time and players plan for it versus unnecessary preseason game. The guy didn't have the puck. What's your take on what happened?
I think Robertson saw an opportunity to kind of raise up in the lineup. And he went for
open a roster spot.
Yeah. He's like, I want to play in the first and second line. This is what I need to do. Now, it happens all the time. You give the guy a little boost, but yeah, you don't need to do that. Nobody's thinking like, oh, it's preseason. We need to. I think it's more Willie Nylander. Just he was annoyed. He fell. He got hit in the head. And so he just went off. I don't think there's anything to it. I think he's perfectly fine. And it is what it is. People, because it's Toronto, are making a mountain out of a molehill.
Another tweet that said Nylander thought it was a stick from the other team, so he was going down just to draw a penalty.
Probably. Yeah. Why not? If you go down,
so this hurt.
Is Toronto. Yeah. Who cares? He'll be fine. He's going to be fine. The biggest thing is Mitch Marner going to resign? That's a bigger question. When am I going to start getting my accolades for calling this? When am I going to start people start listening up when I say something? Something correct. This is absolutely to what I said to a T. He's going to walk for nothing. Absolutely for nothing. Ovechkin is not going to get the record. Thank you very much. Everything I say, it's right. No respect. Rodney Dangerfield.
Ovechkin is absolutely going to get the record. But
All right. We're better breakfast on it. Other than that, it's time to go. I got to go home. Have a good weekend, everybody. I'm glad you listened to the show. I hope you liked it. We'll see everybody next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.